Welcome, everybody, to the regular school committee meeting of November 5th, 2013. Calling the meeting to order at 6:02 p.m. First item, as always, on the agenda is the consent agenda. If there are no objections, we'll consider everything there approved. Excellent. Correspondence? I know there was one piece on the website about the school calendar.
Yes, there's a piece on the school calendar, and I'm trying to get in, I'm sorry.
Okay.
While he's looking for that, I've heard from a couple parents about the conferences.
Okay.
They're sort of regarded as laughably short. Seems to be a widespread.
Are they different than before?
They're 20 minutes, which is the same.
Okay.
Although in one particular case, they had been shortened to 10 minutes because of departmentalization. Two teachers were sharing.
Ours is 10 minutes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So 20 minutes seems to be that that's not adequate. 10 minutes is beyond that.
Now we're talking elementary.
Okay. Any response from anybody else? George, Michael?
I would agree. They are short. We haven't changed them in a number of years. Primarily, it's just time. We'd have to buy time for teachers to be able to have non-student time to be able to do longer conferences. We struggle certainly at the middle school and at the high school. You know, teachers see 120 kids, and presumably 90% of those parents want to see those teachers to do 20 minutes. We're talking a lengthy number of, almost two full days of time to be able to accomplish it.
Right. Although elementary teachers see fewer parents, right?
Yes. 20 and 25 has been pretty traditional in my career. It's been rare that I've seen conferences longer than that. And I think that, my experience with our teachers in terms of issues that arise is that if that time isn't enough, they schedule more time at some later time. It's been my experience.
The elementary is typically the 20-25 minute conferences, and then once you get into the multiple teachers, they become the 10 minute conferences. So I don't know if that experience is different. With the people that
don't know the experience, but
here's 10, right?
10, yeah. But obviously they see people for 10 minutes, but they're seeing usually four different teachers, so it's total exposure is long.
Just passing on what I heard.
No, I hear that.
I heard a rumor that they were thinking of getting rid of parent-teacher conferences.
From someone? I haven't heard that.
I heard that, but that isn't why I raised my hand. I had a concerned parent call today about the traffic on Route 70 to Route 117. They had to wait 20 minutes to take a left onto 117, and there's lots of buses behind them, they said. They don't understand why we can't have a police officer on standby. Certain days there is this traffic problem, maybe once a week. All those kids are getting to school late. If we had a police officer on standby, the police station is literally across the street pretty much from the school. They could be down there in 2-3 minutes and help with the bottleneck. So they thought maybe when the first bus calls to say we think we're going to be late, if they could call the police station and get somebody over there. They actually did approach a police officer last time it happened, and the police officer was just kind of like, oh, well, maybe we could work something out. But 25 minutes late for school is pretty late.
I'll talk to the chief. We had one bus that was significantly late because of traffic coming off 70, and we rerouted them so they were coming off on 17.
So this parent says she drives her kids to school every day and is in that traffic every day, and it happens once, about once a week, and if it's good, once every 2 weeks, but usually it's once a week. It can be a 15. Today was excessive, 20 presidents.
I wonder if it's related to transportation, construction related to Bolton, you know, in terms of...
That's why, I don't know. Yeah. It's pretty far down there to be...
There was an accident on Route 2 this morning, the truck got fire, and that caused that.
Oh, okay.
So was it just that one?
Yeah, the last bus got there about 12 minutes late. So it was before first period.
Well, that's good. So should I tell her that you'll talk to the...
But it truly really was. People were waiting for quite a while.
Usually are they there
10
minutes before?
Yeah, they usually
are. So they're about 20. Yeah, so it's about 25 minute delay. So...
Okay, good to know.
It's on your list. I will definitely
call. Okay, I'll let that parent know.
I totally forgot. It's running late. I forgot to welcome and introduce Lorraine Romasco, our new rep from Bolton. As I think I said in our last meeting, we had four people step up to volunteer, which is awesome. And the selectman and the remaining rep from the town is charged with appointing somebody. That happens to be me. And we chose Lorraine, and very excited to have her with us. She'll be a great addition to the group. Welcome.
Thank you.
Any other correspondence?
I had a letter from a parent concerning the sixth grade homework load in Lancaster. I told her, asking if there was a written policy. I referred her to the sixth grade team and the principal.
Okay.
And I think Pat has already handled it, so.
Or told me what to say
tonight.
No,
I haven't
Love to hear things like that.
Yeah, so.
Response.
So. Great. Any other bits of correspondence?
No.
Okay. Michael, superintendent's report?
Sure. It's brief tonight. I feel like it was just away for a brief time, but it was seemed like eons. I was part of an ES visit to one of our sister high schools in the western part of the state at Drury High School in North Adams, and it's a great refresher for me as the leader of the district to see what ES expects and what our own high school will be going through, and certainly one of the ahas coming out of there is that we have a lot to do with getting our school committee invested in that process, and so I'll be talking with Mr. Sacalarian and Dr. Graham more about how we can get some visits from some of the standards committees to the school committee so you know the language. One of the tasks is when they visit, they interview the school committee, and you need to know what you're talking about and not just, you know, say, yes, Mr. Sacalarian was here once. We want you to be invested because it's the right thing to do. It's about accreditation, which is certainly very important to our students and their families. This is a very in-depth process, and it's also, I think, something that you want to know about because our teachers are spending a lot of time trying to give evidence on a regular basis to NEAS to show that we're meeting their standards. So in the coming weeks and months, we'll have some visits from the what they call standards committees and whatever other exercises we think would be helpful for you to get a full picture of what NEAS is about. We are underway with the budget process for FY15. We are certainly beginning the conversations, as we always do, with teachers and school councils, principals. More information yesterday at our meeting, and so we'll be talking more about that in the coming weeks in terms of what's developing. We have a section later in tonight's agenda just to talk a little bit about some of the things that are probably on the horizon. So I'll be going over that. Part of that will be our schedule for accomplishing this mammoth task, so we'll be thinking about that. We've already welcomed Lorraine, so welcome. And my other piece was that we do have parent-teacher conferences, and this is Thursday and Friday, Thursday afternoon and evening, and Friday all day. We hope that parents take this opportunity to talk with teachers about concerns, praises, compliments, questions, and again, what doesn't get done during that period of time. We certainly encourage them to reach back out and talk with our teachers at another convenient time, because it is important that that ongoing conversation take place. Learning does not take place in a vacuum. It is not between just the teacher and the student. The parent is a critical component. So I hope that everybody takes advantage of parent-teacher conferences. So we have a couple of other activities under superintendent's report.
Right.
So we have Leo Sacolari, who I think he's next on the list.
Yes.
Yep.
And he has a an update of where we are with NEASC. He's our he was our co-chair, but now he's just our chair. No, he's our chair for of the NEASC committee. So, Leo.
Good evening, everyone. We're happy to be here to talk about the self-study process at the high school, how it's unfolding, and where it's going to be going from here up to our site visit in March of 2015. Why accreditation from the New England Association of Schools and Colleges? To say it's the gold standard of New England Regional Association accreditation is an understatement. If you look at the state education website, national websites, the only accrediting institution they mention is NEASC. There are some schools that have gone away from NEASC, and they pretty much, as a whole, go back to NEASC as well. 650 member schools in New England, of which Neshoba is one. There's a 26-person board for the Commission on Public and Secondary Schools that writes the standards by which schools are accredited and evaluated. By engaging in NEASC, it's a commitment to a continual self-evaluation and self-improvement process. A 18-month to two-year self-study and site visit. There are 2 and 5 year reports that follow, and acting on the recommendations from NEASC for those 2 and 5 year benchmarks. And by the time you finish the 5 year ones, you're already starting to look at your next visit coming up towards the end of the 10 year cycle. So it's pretty much a continuous process. How a Neshoba diploma is viewed by college admission boards, how the community is viewed, and property values are very often tied to the accreditation status and the association you get accreditation from. And as we'll see when we go through the standards, they're very challenging. I think for a school like Neshoba Regional High School, we would like to set ourselves to high standards to try and reach at, and NEASC does provide those. The timeline that we're going through right now, there's been impression in some folks that we've been doing the NEASC self-study for 3 years now. Actually, from spring of 2012 to spring of 2013, we weren't really doing the self-study so much as getting ourselves ready to begin it. We were developing a new set of core values and a mission statement, a set of school-wide learning expectations, and then creating school-wide rubrics by which we are providing evidence that teaching and learning at Neshoba is in line with what we say we expect from our students and what we say we value among our staff, students, and the community. From this fall until next fall, 2014, the self-study process involves researching based on the standards, writing the report, and then getting ready for our self-study visit in March of 2015. And by the way, the links that are on this presentation will take you to either resources from the high school that show what work we've done so far, or their links to the NEASC website that show you the rating guides and some information about the different standards. So this fall into the fall of 2014, the staff is divided into different standards committees, and we'll talk about those standards in a few slides. Subcommittees research on specific indicators within those standards. A steering committee guides the entire process. It acts as a liaison between the different standards and the central group, and then prepares the logistics for the site visit. 20 hours includes the time we've worked this fall and all the PD time we have upcoming through the spring. That culminates with standards reports being delivered by the different the 7 standard committees. The staff as a whole votes to approve the assessments of those committees, and then that report goes to get edited and finally finished and sent off to NEASC, and then we get ready for the March 2015 visit. The 7 standards for accreditation are core values, beliefs, and learning expectations, and as you'll see, each of the other 6 standards are supposed to emanate from that first standard. NEASC wants to see that what we say we value is seen throughout all of the different aspects of teaching and learning at Neshoba. school culture and leadership, curriculum, instruction, and assessment, and we'll see how they expect curriculum, instruction, and assessment are really interwoven standards. School resources for learning, school personnel and student support services, and community resources for learning, more about budgetary issues. The rating scale we'll get when the NEAS team visits, makes their determination, and writes their report, we will either get accreditation, accreditation with warnings where they identify one or two areas of standards of concern, or accreditation on probation where they've identified three or more standards as being either deficient or limited in significant ways. And within each standard, there's the four ratings of exemplary, acceptable, limited, or deficient. Those are the same standards that the self-study teams will be looking at ourselves and assessing ourselves by. That's the same language that the visiting team from NEAS is going to use when they write their report. So the first standard, core values, the words of NEAS standard itself is that they want to see that the core values were created through a dynamic, collaborative, and inclusive process. We spent a year creating our core values, incorporating input from community members, from students, and from staff, and we did it in a pretty deliberate and inclusive process, so I'm pretty satisfied when they come in, they're going to see that that is how our values and expectations were created. They want to see, however, that those values and expectations are measurable. They're tied to specific academic and civic social learning expectations, and that there are school-wide rubrics that assess those things and provide data for a continual formal assessment to see that those values actually drive the school and actually we mean what we say. They want to see they're reflected throughout the school, and they want to see that there's a formal process that they're reviewed regularly, and that the changes are made either to rubrics or expectations based upon data from student assessment and student work. School culture, is the focus is that there's a safe and positive environment for all students, that there's equitable and inclusive access to learning for all. They want to see that there's adequate professional development to follow through with changes to curriculum, enhancement to instruction, and also to do adequate assessment and looking at student work in order to improve all three of those aspects of curriculum, instruction, and assessment. That there's avenues for teacher leadership, coordination and collaboration among the different administrative stakeholders, and they'll look at communication between the school leader, high school leadership, the superintendent, and the school committee. Whether class size and student load are adequate or are an obstacle to the effective creation of a safe and inclusive and equitable school culture, and whether the daily schedule or the yearly calendar provides the necessary time to facilitate all these different activities. Curriculum first, they want to see if that it's aligned with 21st century skills. If you go to the Partnership for 21st Century Skills website, p21.org, you're going to find some of the same language there as you find in the NEAS standards or in the Common Core standards. Those three are pretty much aligned. They want to make sure that the schools that they visit are aligned with those as well. So with 21st century skills, the Common Core, and the state frameworks, as well as our school-wide learning expectations. They want to see that the written curriculum is being taught in the classrooms, and it's not just what's written sits in a binder on a shelf, and what's taught doesn't connect to what we say we teach. They want to see that the curriculum is comprehensive and in a consistent format across disciplines, and by comprehensive they mean not simply just a pacing guide on a piece of paper, but that there's what's going to be taught, what different strategies are going to be used, what kind of assessment is going to be used, and how that will be followed up throughout a course and even throughout a four-year process. They want to see that the curriculum is challenging, that staffing resources and facilities and technological equipment are sufficient to support the delivery of a challenging curriculum, that there's coordination of the curriculum across different disciplines at the high school, and that there's articulation of that curriculum down to the middle schools that send students up to us, and especially in that transition process between students coming from eighth grade to ninth grade. And that there are effective use of time and resources available for ongoing collaboration to continuously assess and revise the curriculum based upon assessment and evidence of student work. They want to see that instruction is very closely tied to our core values and learning expectations, that it's data-driven, that analysis of student work becomes the foundation from which there's a continual process for improvement, especially looking for techniques of formative assessment so that instructors are understanding how their students learn and are adjusting how they teach on the fly. That there's personalization and differentiation to help students become self-directed learners. emphasis on problem solving and higher order thinking, and that the instruction is a reflective process, not only for the instructor, but for the student as well. That there's engaging and meaningful use of technological integration, and that teachers are content experts, and that there's collaboration among those different disciplines to enhance instruction. For assessment, there's a heavy emphasis that school-wide rubrics, again, aren't something that's filed away and gets changed every 10 years, but that is an active part of how teachers across different disciplines assess their students, and that there's communication between instructors as to what that assessment means and then how it's being used to inform the process. Communication of data, not only individually, but also collectively, both to students and to the community, as well as among the educators. That there's a wide range of assessments, not simply just summative assessments, pencil and paper tests, but that there's pre-assessments, formative assessments, project-based assessments, and differentiated ways to provide students different ways to prove mastery of skills. Common assessments and time to collaborate for the creation of assessment strategies and to analyze the data. And they want to see that there are clear and consistent connections between the curriculum and assessment, and that those things go hand in hand as a continually self-improving process. School Resources looks at student support services and how intervention strategies address students who are in need of help or are considered, quote unquote, at risk. That there's effective coordination and communication among the different student support services at the high school through administration and their organization of RTI meetings and their STAT meetings that we have that identify students in need. Does the Library and Media Center provide adequate support to curriculum and instruction? Special Education, Guidance, and the Academic Support Center, are they working in conjunction to identify student needs, either academic or behavioral? Do our health and counseling personnel provide needed information for our students? And is there effective access and use of resources to maximize those different student support services in their coordination and outreach to students, but also to the community as well? In the words of NEAS, they want to see that there's dependable funding for programs and services, professional development, staff, technology, supplies, and equipment. Looking for a collaborative budgeting process and how that information is communicated from the classroom to a department chair, to a principal, and then to administration in the district and the school committee. Looking at the physical plants and maintenance plans and long-range plans for capital improvements, facilities, enrollment, and technology. Of course, adherence to fire, health, and safety regulations, and community outreach to develop parent, business, and higher education partnerships with the school. So after we finish our report and send it out, we get ready for our site visit on March 8th through 11th of 2015. The Sunday part of the visit is when the committee is going to come to their hotel. They're going to meet, do some initial work, then they come to the high school. There'll be a presentation given where we present some of our information that we found in our self-study. They're going to want to do interviews with teachers on that day. 16 members of the self-study team, of the NEAS team, are going to interview two teachers each. So they're going to have 32 staff members. We'll have 32 staff members there, as well as the superintendent and the school committee. There'll also be some visiting team members who are going to interview a committee of parents as well. On Monday and Tuesday, there'll be student tours around the facility. Some of these visiting team members will be doing student shadowing throughout periods of the day, classroom observations, and they're going to do targeted interviews based upon what committee they're part of. Wednesday, the shadowing continues and some observations continue. The visiting team chair is going to meet with high school leadership, and then there'll be an all-staff meeting at the end where the chair is going to provide some of their observations, give a timeline of when they can expect the initial report, which may come in 2 to 3 weeks after the visit, and then the final report, which comes within 2 to 3 months after the visit. One of the things for logistics that we're getting ready for now is having a budgeting number to prepare for the budget you folks will be working on in December to January. Looking at lodging and meals for 16, transportation reimbursement, clerical supplies and equipment needs. There could be additional expenses for the chair and assistant chair who show up early and leave late, and any applicable NEASC fees that come once every 10 years, as well as the annual fee. I'm going to recommend to Dr. Graham, and he'll make his recommendation forward based on that, that we budget anywhere from $30,000 to $35,000 for this. That's the number I've heard from the many different steering chairs that I've talked to at different schools who have gone through this process in the last 2 years. We probably wouldn't end up spending all that money, but the idea would be whatever we don't spend, it goes back into the district kitty at the end of the fiscal year, but we want to make sure we have the adequate resources that we need. And for any more information on our core values, our mission statement, our school-wide learning expectations and rubrics, and samples of the work the staff has done, is currently engaging in, and will continue to do through the self-study process. Please feel free to visit that Google site where we have pretty much created a warehouse and a timeline of all the work we've done so far on NEASC and will continue to, or also feel free to email me as the steering committee chair. There are lots of people at the high school who have done a lot of hard work on this, a lot of people who are pretty knowledgeable about this process. I think I've talked to all of them multiple times on their roles. So I'd be happy to direct you to other folks as well, but I'm probably the first person you want to talk to get any information you need. Does anyone have any questions?
I do.
Yes.
Can you just tell us a little bit about the history of, like, how many years have we been accredited, and have we gotten a lot of those smiley faces or frowns?
Our last accreditation was in 2003, or the visit was in 2004. We were accredited with warning, if I recall, on one standard, school culture and leadership, and I think two of the changes they looked for back then was they wanted greater access for teacher leadership. We did not have department chairs at the time. We returned to a department chair leadership structure after that, and they also wanted changes to the schedule, because they believed that was inhibiting students' equitable access to course signups. They were finding that student requests for courses were not at a percentage that they at the time had determined that they should be.
And that's something that we've changed?
Yes. With warning, again, they're going to provide their recommendations, and they're going to say, by 1 year's time, you need to provide us with proof that you've made changes we recommended, and then follow up 2- and 5-year reports to make sure that we're looking at the changes we've made and to have assessed whether or not those changes have actually addressed what they wanted us to address.
I see. And in the self-study, there might be something identified as something that we need to have our eyes on?
For example, as Mr. Wood and I were working at the Drury self-study, and we heard some of the expectations for school culture and leadership, that we have at least one heterogeneously grouped class, core class, in a student's 4-year high school experience, and that we have advisories for every student. We know those are things we don't have at the high school right now. So if we were assessed on that standard right now, we'd be found as deficient. Now, deficient in one standard does not mean you don't get accreditation or you get accreditation with warning necessarily. And some schools will write in their reports and say, we understand this is a NEASC expectation, we respectfully disagree, and provide those reasons that they disagree. And in some ways, it's up to the committee to decide whether or not they find that explanation to be sufficient, or if they're going to continue to insist that certain aspects of the NEASC standards rubrics be met.
I see.
Can you just explain what a heterogeneous class, core class, is?
So core class is math, science, social studies, foreign language, that there is at least one course that every student takes in 4 years, not every year, but at least one of the 4 years that is unleveled.
So that has so no that, AP, regular, and college prep. Mm,
absolutely.
Why
do they, did you ask why do they look for that? There is some current research that suggests heterogeneously grouped classes provide greater access for all students to the curriculum, that perhaps for those lower performing students, being around higher performing students can help raise the bar for them, provides leadership opportunities for higher performing students. A lot of schools don't have this, and I think you could, there's a significant debate within the research itself as to whether or not this is beneficial. Me personally, I think this is one of the NEASC expectations that maybe there's more room to view it subjectively. The people who write these standards are, on the whole, high school principals or assistant principals. There are some superintendents and a couple of teachers as well. So it's not people who are kind of on high from removed from a high school experience who are writing this. But their reading of the research says they think this is important. But again, if you were found deficient in one standard, that does not mean accreditation is at risk necessarily.
So we have these classes, it's just not mandatory for everyone to take them within the 4 years.
Not
in
the core.
Not in the core subjects.
Oh, okay, that's right.
So if it's an elective, if you have one in 4 years, that only allows you to become limited. They would want to see at least two throughout a 4-year period for you to be viewed as acceptable or exemplary.
Okay.
I don't think you would get a lot of pushback from parents on that.
Mm-hmm.
And
me personally, yes, I think so, yes. And it's probably why a lot of schools have not moved to this model and are willing to challenge and ask at least on this one aspect of this one standard expectation.
So are there still a fair number of teachers at the high school who were involved the last time that you did the accreditation who can sort of provide continuity, insight?
I think maybe a third of the staff that was there in 2004 is there now. One of the pieces of information we're looking at is our 2004 reports. Looking at those reports and talking to those staff helps to emphasize the fact that a lot of things have changed in the last 10 years. And the real benefit of this process is to really be reflective about what's happening now. So those reports are kind of helpful and more when it comes to the style and writing of the report, but in many ways, the self-study process is really more about where you are right now. And some of that information is outdated and not as helpful.
Are there any other areas that you see particular challenges for us? Things we need to be aware of, at least, things we need to consider as we move forward over the next year?
One that we're probably not going to be able to address anytime soon, and that's community resources, especially when it comes to facilities and the physical plant. I don't know that we're in danger of being rated deficient or even limited based on physical plant issues, but there might be some aspects of that called into question, whether or not it might be some aspects of equipment that we have or facilities for our science department or just the size, the footprint of the school compared to the growing enrollment of our student population.
So the work that you're going to do is between now and the time that they come is to make the recommendations to the school community? Or is it just to uncover those issues and come up with a plan for addressing them?
In the self-study research, essentially we're taking a snapshot look at where we are now and then assessing where we are based on those NEASC standards. That's the purely bureaucratic aspect of the process. More important for me anyways, and the reason why I volunteered to be chair is that it's a unique opportunity to do some serious school improvement. And that means looking at what we find reflectively and honestly. So there are some things we're going to uncover that become serious focuses for improvement. And at the end of each of the standards reports, there's going to be a set of strengths and needs, as well as at the end of the final report, we're going to produce our own strengths and needs. And I think some schools might approach it from a sense of, let's try and put our best face forward in this report. I think our staff has really come at this from the perspective of, let's put the most honest face mm-hmm. forward and make this process as helpful as possible for real school improvement.
If you show that you identified a deficiency but have a plan to remediate it, are you still found deficient?
I believe if you have a plan and there's already evidence that that plan is in place and that progress is being made towards addressing what they're going to find as being an area of issue, that I don't want to say that a lot of it is determined by the people who are on the visiting team, but I think the discussions they have in some ways are driven by who the chair is and how they choose to interpret some parts of the NEASC rubrics. They're going to say, you have no latitude to interpret this, you should read it as this or that. Others, they have adjectives or other words that give you some latitude. So some of it may be at the vagaries of who those visiting team folks are, but they're going to be people who work in high schools. They're coming from the other 650 schools. So I don't think anyone's coming in and saying, this is how everything should be, the school should be perfect. They're coming from high schools themselves, and they're going to look at their own schools, like Mr. Wood and I did, and say, wow, that's a high expectation for NEASC to have. So I think having a plan in place, especially if we identify areas of need before they come to visit, can only be helpful, yes.
Like for the science lab, we did apply for some money, we mm-hmm. got it, we have a new plan, hopefully to get something going there, so hopefully that would help.
But this NEASC process, I mean, this is to take a look at what we have existing, how we're using our facility, and how we're using our plan, how we're using our teachers, and whatever. This isn't to put a strain on a system, is it? Where they would come in and say, you are missing this, you need to
you'll build a new wing or something, or
no, they talk a lot about in the visiting community not to be prescriptive. In other words, they're not going to tell you what to do or how to solve them. In fact, they see themselves as a tool that you know we can use. If they read the self-study and then do their visit and they agree with us and they write that in their report, they want you to use their report to help you get that word out and get, you know, the community and MSBA or whomever you're going after to learn about your school. So
one of the pieces of evidence, particularly for the community resources standard, which is where they'd be looking at the physical plant, is what are the long-range plans for addressing technological needs, maintenance, capital improvements. So if there's something they see in 2015 that is not to the standard they would expect, the first thing they do is refer to the long-range plan. If they see it's going to be addressed in the long range down 2 or 5 years' time, I think that is certainly going to be something that satisfies their expectation based on the ASC standard.
Yeah, can you just talk a little bit more about, you had said before we were accredited with, what did you call it? Accredited with a dependency.
Warning.
With a warning.
Yes.
Is that the overall, or is that we were accredited, yay, that's great, but in this little section we were had a warning? Or is it a warning overall?
You still have accreditation, but the warning applies to a specific standard. For our case back in 2004, it applied to a specific standard.
Okay.
If we had not met expectations and addressed concerns for that standard's warning within a certain amount of time, then they consider putting an asterisk to your accreditation. If you look at all the different schools that are currently accredited or in the self-study process on the NEASC website, and they say schools on probation have an asterisk, you don't find any right now that are on probation. And the rubrics we look at, when we were doing the self-study, non-accreditation was not an option that we saw. And again, from all the schools that are currently under a self-study process, nobody has been denied accreditation.
And just as a caveat, a little bit of history, the high school, the district had just gone through probably its most tumultuous time. And to put oil and vinegar together, the high school is going through a construction project, which doesn't always endear you to the staff who have to work through a construction project. So they had sort of that double whammy of having the financial crisis, the crisis in leadership, I dare say maybe within the high school at the time, as well as within the district. So, you know, there were some activities that were going on that sort of led to that. And remember, it's the high school staff that write the self-study, so it's a very reflective piece based on the people who are working within the building. So, you know.
And if you talk to any of the staff members who were there for the last accreditation cycle, I believe they would all say we're in a much better place than we are now than we were 10 years ago going into that self-study. And that self-study came up with warning and one standard, so.
And is the self-study the process that a school would go through if they've never been accredited, or is that only the process that happens if you've already been accredited?
It was both. If you're first entering into a 10-year cycle for NEASC, you go through a self-study. It's the same process that if you're going for reaccreditation at the end of the 10-year cycle.
Any other questions for me?
I'm just wondering, you on the spot. You ran the eye care thing, that whole process, did you?
The steering committee for accreditation did organize a process that involved over a year's time. We developed professional development to create teacher inventories of what they saw as critical learning expectations and important values, not only for values that we expect of students, but values we expected of teachers, students, and the community.
Okay.
Those lists of inventories then went through both student and community surveys for them to rank what teachers had created. We had panel discussions of both students and then teachers, and then we had a core values evening back in December of 2012 where community members and several people who were in this room took all the information that our teachers, our community members, and our students gave us and whittled that down to four key values: communicate, achieve, relate, and engage. As we brought that core values forum back to students and teachers, the one value that both students and teachers said they thought should be incorporated, and what do communicate, achieve, relate, and engage emanate from, the word that kept coming up was integrity. So from that core values night, we added the value integrity, and that's where those four values came from. From there, once those were approved by the school committee, we identified learning expectations and rubrics to measure adherence to those expectations that assess across disciplines whether or not our teaching, academic, and also civic social expectations are matching what we say we value in those core values. And now we're in the process of, quote unquote, branding those across the building with staff, with students.
And that's part of the process where what you say is that what you do, is that what NEASC is checking?
The process is that NEASC wants to see that it's there and that it means something. I think we've taken it to the next level where we want it to mean something because we're a better school if these do mean something. That is more important for this to exist in reality than just on paper.
Do you see it? Does it mean something?
Yeah, I think so. I can definitely see that the teachers are trying to push this, the new mission statement, like they're trying to promote the new values and that can bring them into the classroom. And the five values, like I can see that, like, they relate to what the students are, like how the students act in the classrooms and in hallways, and I feel like it definitely represents what mission stands for. So, yes.
And you hear some comments to the effect, well, it's kind of corny, and I like corny in that case because it's not only is it memorable, but it also sparks conversation. And in my opinion anyways, it's light years ahead of where we were with our last core values and mission statement, because that kind of sat on a letterhead and sat in a folder or was posted on a wall in one area, and it didn't necessarily really drive the culture of the school, programming, teaching, and learning. And I think there's a collective active process, not only by teachers but by students as well, through different programs and activities we have involving student contests for developing posters for our mission statement, developing logos ongoing, and also developing murals across the building. So it's something that's hopefully more than just visible around the school, but it's actually going to be visible in the classrooms, in our programs, and on how we make decisions.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Still there. So we have two schools that are going to report out on school councils, Ms. Burbank and then Michelle Florence Sawyer.
Hello, everyone. At the last meeting, I talked about membership, and we were waiting for elections to conclude. I have three new parent members. Julie Brummer, Heather LeBlanc, and Frances Christie have joined school council. Gina McNeil is serving as our co-chair this year. At our last meeting, we talked quite a bit about writing and about an initiative that we actually started 3 years ago. We called it intervention groups. And really what it was pulling kids from a specialty class once per six-day rotation, and teachers would use one of their team times. They would break up the kids into very small groups, 3, 4, 5 kids in a group, sit with a teacher, and work on writing skills. And we have done this for 3 years. We've sort of perfected it over time. And last year's results, I want to mention too that this is a significant portion of the MCAS, open response writing. Last year, 66 kids participated in the ELA intervention groups, and 58% of them demonstrated improvement, higher scores. 56 students participated in the math intervention groups, and 34% of those students showed improvement. And you know, that's really valuable. The downside to this is students are being pulled from specialty classes to get this intervention, and that's not okay. It impacts the student. Some will come to the intervention group resentful. They're missing a class that they really like. It makes it difficult for specialty teachers to try to keep everybody at the same level. So a lot of issues with it. And you know, we tried to weigh things out. We needed to provide the intervention. It was the only way that we could do it, we thought. This year, we have a different schedule. I manipulated the schedule over the summer, and what we have done essentially is created an additional period. I've shortened by 9 minutes some morning periods on B days, and I've created this additional intervention period. And we call it now B-Day Intervention. We've run the intervention through the month of October in our first rotation this month. And at tomorrow's staff meeting, will be each team will be presenting pros and cons about this new model. What's really good about the new model, number one, is specialty teachers aren't missing any kids. Kids aren't missing those classes. Every teacher in the school, every staff member in the school is involved in providing some type of support. And it goes to all students, where the previous model we had were really our struggling students, our students that were not typically proficient. They were either wanting or needs improvement or just barely proficient. This new model provides some enrichment for those proficient kids, hopefully that'll push them into the advanced category. So there's a lot of advantages to this new model, but another side of it is this significant prep work for teachers, and that's going to be part of our discussion tomorrow.
Is it just math?
No, it's math and ELA.
So all kids get to do, and what happens to it? They get additional work that they do during that period?
Yeah, we still have... the way the new model works is similar in some ways to the old one, because we still have teachers meeting with very small groups of kids, and these are the kids that really struggle. They need that small group instruction. For other students that are already proficient, let's say it's ELA, they're already proficient or advanced in ELA, they're doing another activity at a higher level, and that's being supervised by other staff members.
In larger groups?
Yes, in larger groups.
This is only with the library?
Yes.
How's it going?
I'll know soon.
Yeah, I mean, there's pros and cons. And, you know, like I said, staff will be presenting it tomorrow. We have a Google a pros and cons list, so I've been looking at pros and cons all week. You know, the biggest struggle is the prep work. It's the thought that needs to go into it, and have a well-designed activity for varying levels of learners, and that's really the struggle.
Because they're not leaving the classroom, they're just...
They do. We have kids in different areas of the building, yeah.
Okay.
But they're assigned. All the specialist teachers are working, guidance counselors working on this. All the staff really participate in the intervention.
So it happens once in an 8-day cycle?
Once in a 6-day cycle.
It's like 6 days, okay.
And do the kids go the same thing all the time? So if the kids struggle with math, they're constantly going to the...
The real goal is for students, if they're in that intervention group, those small groups, the real goal is for students to be proficient, to demonstrate what we're looking for and get out of that group.
Okay. What if they're struggling in both?
I'm sorry?
What if they're struggling in both?
Well, one rotation, one day, it'll be for a particular team only ELA.
Okay.
On another day, it'll be only math. But the goal really is to work the kids out of that group.
Is there any real concerns or complaints about lessening a class by 9 minutes? How many classes do you have to lessen on B day to do that?
Four classes.
Because that's a really short class. Because they already know.
38-minute classes.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's, you know, again, pros and cons. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's all academic. it's all the standards, ELA or math standards.
But they usually change subjects that quickly anyways, don't they?
In terms of 38 minutes.
Well, no, but when I've gone in to help a classroom, they rotate every 20 minutes.
Yeah, ask it.
Activity.
our periods are 47-minute periods.
In elementary?
No, middle school.
Middle school. This is middle school.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Now, were there more
You seem to be at the forefront of these types of interventions. Do you have more of them than the other students?
More plans?
More participants in intervention.
I'm not sure I understand your question.
That, no, I think it's that intervention. It's kids who are proficient on the MCAT.
So this is the MCAT proficiencies? Or is this just general?
We identify the kids using the MCAT scores.
Okay.
Yeah. But the MCAT scores, too, will break out. When you look at those scores, they're going to break it out by standards. Mm-hmm. Open response is one of those standards.
Right. Okay.
Well, all of those schools have a model intervention plan. Yeah, just do it
there. Yeah. We have, I think, all of the schools, I think we share the plus class model. We have this. This is in addition to that.
Okay. Well, it'd be interesting to share your mm-hmm. your pros and cons so the other schools can kind of learn from that.
Yeah, it's going to be an interesting meeting for me. No, I'm looking forward to it because I think there's a lot of positive things about the plan, but the plan isn't perfect. There is no perfect plan. Mm-hmm. And what can we take? What can we tweak? How can we improve this and make it work better for everybody? Really, that's our goal. And people are on board. They've worked incredibly hard to make it work. Just a couple other things I just want to update the committee on. Math Counts team participated in the competition at St. John's on October 24th. It's a young team, math team. Ann Sadler is in charge of the team. She's grooming the team for the competition, the Math Counts Regional Competition, which will be held in February. On October 30th, we held a SOS Middle School Suicide Prevention Program with our seventh graders. Almost all the students participated. Parents do have an opportunity to opt out of this program. In summary, the program is the students view a DVD, a movie about depression. There are conversations, discussions led by four different facilitators, and then students take a survey. The surveys are collected, they're scored, students that score in a certain range. There are follow-up sessions, parents are contacted. And it's been a good and valuable program. This is the fourth year running it at the middle school. And on October 31st, we held an unannounced lockdown in conjunction with the police department at Lancaster, and things went overall very, very well. It was the first time we had a lockdown with the new communication system in Lancaster, and a little bit of a hiccup, a little bit of a delay with once our calls went into the communication system, that system notifying the police. Little delay that Chief Lamb is working on. Okay. Any questions?
The suicide prevention program that you mentioned, is that a district-wide program?
It is.
I thought I had heard of it. Okay. That's great.
Mm-hmm. I have one question. Yes. Last time you were here, you announced that you had a new director, and I unfortunately told my daughter every day it's when's the plan going to get announced? Any news on when?
She hopes to have a meeting. Last piece of communication I had prior to Thanksgiving. Hopes to have a meeting.
Thank you.
So I don't have a lot of information.
I'll say prior to Thanksgiving.
But, yeah, kids have been coming into the office regularly. They're looking forward to it.
No, I just had one quick question about, and I didn't think of this until you mentioned it, the lockdown. Yeah. I had some feedback, and I know it can be kind of jaded because when it's reported back from children. Mm-hmm. How are substitute teachers trained for lockdown?
It is discussed at the orientation.
At the orientation.
And each teacher in their plan should have a safety plan as part of their sub-plan. Each room has a folder or backpack with information in their subs. Part of the plan is teachers leaving that information, where to find that backpack, where to find that folder. Mm-hmm.
I just had some feedback that the teacher was standing up in the doorway, the kids were told to grab the backpack, teacher came in after it started. And I just said, you know, you guys need to make sure you take it seriously. It is a serious thing.
And
God forbid we ever need it.
Yeah. And they do take it very seriously. I walk every lockdown with the police. Officer Shaw and I split up. I covered half of the classrooms, and it's really, it's pretty eerie, actually, going through, looking in. You know there's 300 people, teachers and students, in this building. You can't see anybody.
Yeah.
I get goosebumps every time I do this.
And when you find out, like, that shades fall down, you pull them down, obviously you fix that after and stuff like that.
Yeah.
I meant to test it, but yeah, you know.
Yeah, you really.
The safest place to be apparently is the gym.
Yeah.
In the boys' locker room, that's where everyone would like to be if it ever really happened. Yeah. Yes.
Yeah. It's really interesting.
Yeah.
Going through the fun.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Is Bill Cleary working with him on the connection to the fire department or the police department? That's a phone.
We were connected. We were working on issues on our end. I think it's now on Chief Lamb's side.
It's
with the regional dispatch.
Wherever the call goes in.
Right.
I think it was on their
end
that the issue was.
Yeah.
It was about a minute and 15 seconds, something like that, I believe, the chief clocked before. Once we called in, they were called.
The second count.
Yeah. Good evening, everyone.
Good evening.
Our PAC liaison, Becky Herberger, and co-chair Michelle Kelly were not able to be here tonight. They should be here moving forward throughout the rest of the year. So, brief PAC update. PAC recently sponsored an anti-bullying presentation for our 6th, 7th, and 8th graders. My thanks go out to Mr. King for letting us know about the performance. Through George's efforts, we were able to partner with Hale and bring the group to Hale in the morning and Sawyer in the afternoon. In addition to both schools hearing the same message, we also save money in the process by doing it that way. PAC's gearing up for its annual family bingo night on November 22nd. It's a fun event and is a pretty lucrative one for PAC. Our school council's most pressing need right at the moment is to find a new parent representative. Our PAC will facilitate the process. I wrote to parents today in my weekly communication requesting letters of interest, which I will then turn over to PAC. They'll facilitate the process, and the successful candidate will hope to have on board by December to fill Mrs. Romasco's term on the council. That person obviously has big shoes to fill, so congratulations to you. That's mixed emotion survey. In October, I provided the school council with an MCAS report that I have subsequently added to our MCAS data dashboard on our website. I outlined the steps additionally that we go through as a school in preparing our FY15 budget. Our budget, as you know, is informed by our school improvement plan, which is subsequently informed by our survey data and the needs across the constituencies of our school. Our SIP is currently under redevelopment. This past Friday, we officially opened our new playground and turf field. We had a number of parents and children in attendance, and the early reviews are very positive. I'd also like to publicly extend our thanks to all of the parents, the volunteers, the vendors that came together to make this project a reality. And in less than 2 years, funds were raised, land was cleared, plans were approved, and those plans were brought to completion for the next generation of Florence Sawyer School students. We are, as Patrick mentioned, also gearing up for conferences and look forward to meeting with parents and sharing our initial impressions about student progress and strengths and using this time to set goals for a successful trajectory throughout the rest of the school year. On November 13th, we'll hold our first spaghetti supper for families. This event takes the place of the annual student faculty softball game, which was rained out at the end of last year. The reason we wanted an additional event is that the proceeds that are raised from this event go to fund a scholarship for a former Florence Sawyer School student who is a graduating senior from Neshoba. In our November school council meeting, I'll be presenting an update on our education evaluation process and what that means for teachers and how that's going, the process so far. and we'll continue to look at those areas in terms of developing both our budget and our school improvement plan. Thank you.
And last but not least, we are required under the law to give an executive overview of quarterly reports on our collaborative. And so in your packet, you have highlights of work that our collaborative has been undergoing in the last 3 months. Much of it has to do with the new law. And so we've been really working hard to get our charter approved by the commissioner, and so we await for that approval process to go through. We're finally in completely in our 25-year lease for the Bigelow School, which houses the main offices of the collaborative, but also two major programs, a high school program for alternative education, and the SOAR program. And the majority of other programs that the ABC Collaborative operates are in public schools with full inclusion. Lots of things around technology. Obviously, they are public school settings, so they have to follow the new evaluation process. We did last year, and we housed it half of it here, the multi-district paraprofessional training, which was very successful, and we were able to provide, I think it was over 300 participants last year through all of our districts, several very valuable trainings. I mentioned transportation in our finance committee meeting. The collaborative transitioned to a new special education provider, and so it's been very successful, and the collaborative districts that participate are very pleased with it. We currently do not participate with that particular vendor. We are setting very high standards for this year. We have a number of priorities, one which was just completed here at Neshoba, a peer review process, much like we just had the conversation about NEAS. We have set up, which I think is probably a model for, if not the state, certainly the nation, where we do peer review visits, and we do it by group. So we had a group of educators from other districts come in and review our work with our school psychologists, and the idea is to develop a model and a protocol, and then we'll be able to replicate it in our school districts across the collaborative to just build, give feedback, and to build commonalities amongst the collaborative schools. Probably the biggest addition this year, virtual learning is being added to the high school for credit recovery at ASABET, which is very important. I mentioned the collaborative agreement, and we hope to finally have full approval of Grafton and Millbury as members of our particular collaborative. And there are a couple of graphs related to our enrollment and budget. Both are going up, so it's clear that we're part of our success is that we are attracting student referrals, which is always a good thing. But obviously, because it is special needs, many of those referrals are staff intensive as well. So both go together.
Any questions?
When you say staff intensive, does that mean the budget's going up?
The budget has been rising, but it is staff intensive, which means that many of the students do have 100% of their day or above 75% of their day with an adult to assist. They're medically fragile, they might be emotionally fragile, behaviorally impaired. So they need the supervision or the intervention to be safe. And that's that report.
Thank you. I think that moves us right along to the subcommittee reports. Nishita, sorry, you've been waiting for so long, very patiently. But you're first.
So starting off with the athletics report, the fall playoff season is here and all of our teams qualified for tournaments. The cross-country teams both won the Mid-Wachusett B-League championship and they will be competing in the district championship this Saturday. The volleyball team qualified for playoffs the first time in school history this season, and they traveled to Westwood over the weekend to play the first round of the tournament and lost a tough battle. The girls played well and it was a great step for the team. The football team lost the quarterfinal playoff matchup to Shrewsbury last Friday night. We will not play in a non-playoff bracket to finish the season before hosting North Middlesex at home on Thanksgiving. The cheerleading team won the Gardner Wildcat Invitation and will be competing in the league championship this weekend in Leominster. The field hockey team defeated Westboro 4-3 in overtime at Neshoba last Wednesday in the first round of playoffs before falling to Shrewsbury 2-0 on Saturday in the quarterfinals. The team finished the year at 12-6-2. The boys soccer team was the 11th seed in the tournament and traveled to Hudson on Saturday night for a first round game. The team ended up losing 2-1 in sudden victory penalty kicks. The girls soccer team earned the number 2 seed in the tournament. The team played Shrewsbury last night in the quarterfinals and won 5-0. Neshoba will play Algonquin tomorrow night at 7 p.m. at Neshoba in the sectional semifinals. The homecoming dance, which was held 2 Saturdays ago by the student council, was a success, and there was a good turnout, and everyone who went said they really enjoyed it. The Neshoba Green Team is hosting a Nike reuse issue shoe drive. They're collecting used sneakers to repurpose them, to recycle them, to make playgrounds, running tracks, football fields, basketball courts, etc. The Neshoba Drama Society is performing A Midsummer Night's Dream this Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, November 22nd to 24th, at 7:30 p.m. and 2 o'clock on Sunday. That's it.
Great. Any questions?
Did you say girls soccer was tomorrow night at 7?
Yes. Tomorrow at 7.
Home.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Maureen, anything for finance?
No.
Can we approve the warrants and then
that's the bulk of it.
Okay. There's policy, we actually haven't met again since our last meeting, but we do have second readings on that whole slew of policies coming up a little later. Personnel, there's nothing. SPEDPAC, I think there's...
I'd just say we've been trying to get a schedule together, and they're working on it.
Okay.
We just haven't been able to finalize some things. So.
Okay.
We'll get you.
Huh?
Works for me so far.
Okay.
Lynn, anything on ESPC?
We met. And it's pretty much status quo. Nothing's changed.
So there's still some things on the punch list, or?
There's punch list items, there's issues with schools opening and operating, and there's nothing outstanding that came up.
Okay.
But it is not closed yet.
Okay.
So we hope.
Yeah. All right, new business, and under that we have the FY15 budget discussion.
So I alluded to it a bit earlier. So the administrators have been given a schedule. They have to get the proposed plans to George and myself by the week before the Christmas break, and then we'll work in the next 2 weeks to put that all together into a coherent document. the week before, I meet with each of them, I go over their proposals, I give them feedback. They at that point even begin doing some editing if there's some things that just don't fit into the big picture of where we're going or how we're trying to move ahead. For the most part, I try to take everything and put it in just to see how it all comes together. And if, you know, there's some years where when it all works out, it works out and nothing has to be changed dramatically. But then once we get it, we'll spend the next 2 weeks after that really trying to get it to be coherent, to fit the district improvement plan, looking at ahead as we can to any initiatives we see on the horizon. And then January 28th, I believe, will be the launch for the school committee. And then if the committee so desires, that Saturday is traditionally, we usually do it the next Saturday, so that's February 1st for the department presentations, if people have found that valuable. And then subsequent to that, we'll have two working meetings at regular school committee meetings so that we can, move the proposal from the administrative proposal to the school committee budget. And then we'll have the March meeting, March 11th, really as our last meeting before you have to, by charter regional agreement, have to vote your budget. We would presumably have a public hearing on that day at the beginning with the tentative budget, and then you approve that budget for the town meeting.
Is that a Tuesday?
It's a Tuesday. Did I say that? I'm sorry, March 11th. I said 15th, March 11th.
Michael, are you going to include the retired medical prepay thing? We had a seminar, or you came in and had somebody speak about it last spring.
Right. So, that's a big issue, in terms of our overall responsibilities in terms of, what we have to put forward. It's not PERIC.
Yes.
OPEB. And, We need to have those conversations. I don't think right now it's on my plan to put it in.
But don't we have a time limit?
No. It's not required.
Oh, really? I thought we only had 3 years. Okay.
Well, no.
We're required.
You could never do it in 3 years.
Well, that's what I got from talking, that we had a time limit to actually get a certain amount of money in there.
No.
It's on our financial statements, that's all.
Do we have it on now?
What's that?
Is it on our financial statement now?
That's been for 3 years.
Yeah. The debt has been
4 years. Yeah.
So we've been putting money, because I thought there was
the liability. On our financial statement is a notation.
But no money assigned to it?
No. That's why it's a liability. No money assigned to it. The liability is on the bill in the audit.
So this is the one that's currently we pay as you go, but now we have to prepay?
We don't have to. They're simply noting what they say is the unfunded liability.
Okay. So there's no law that said we had to do that? That was under the impression.
It's an accounting standard.
It's an accounting standard, yeah.
Accounting standard, okay.
So there certainly are a number of things on our horizon that I want to make you aware of, I think you are aware of. You know certainly some of the issues that we face around just in general, just technology, trying to make sure that we maintain what we have. We are in the process of rewriting our tech plan. We will probably have a draft completed before the budget process, so I'm very hopeful that most of that first year will be in there, but the timing might be just slightly off. I know that we're having conversations about all-day kindergarten and how to move forward with that in a meaningful way for all kids. We just opened half-day preschool at Stowe. We certainly would like to think about and already have numbers for a second half-day class, so that's certainly possibly on the horizon. We talked about some of the standards in the NEASC piece One of them is about how we're supporting all learners, and that's certainly something that we're going to be looking at, are looking at, to figure out more strategic ways to do that, either with existing programs or with new programs. The bigger issue that we struggle with at the high school is we are under obligation to have 990 hours of instruction for our students, which we do have. But one of the things that I think we want to continue to chip away at is reducing the number of either directed studies or studies that students may have. That's going to be something that certainly I'm aware of, and so you know I'm sure that's something that will be noted in our NEAS study. And that, for us, it's two issues. It's staff and it's space. So that's going to be something we're going to have to be taking a look at. We're not too far off. We're probably about three or four staff off. We need about 66 staff to staff our current schedule. We have, depending on how we count them, between 62 and 63 staff. And so we're not too far off to be able to do it. But of course, it also is incumbent on the kids and what they choose. That helps. We don't have four extra classrooms anywhere. If we were to add four staff, we would really have to think now, before we add them, how we were going to place them in the high school, what spaces we were going to reconfigure or something to make that happen. So that's certainly going to be something we're going to talk about in the next 3 months, to come up with a preliminary plan and then a long-term plan.
So you need the staff for directed studies?
No, we need the staff for instructional classes, so most likely electives. So, for example, music, and we've been chipping away at it, so, you know, we may just add one more this next year and one more in the following year.
To get the kids out of directed study.
Right, get them out of directed study.
Directed studies are what?
Studies.
Well, just regular study. The kids have, every year we have the complaints of the scheduling, and the kid has two studies a day.
Right.
Trying to
get them in classes instead of studies.
I didn't know what it was. I thought it was that you're trying to get from instructional to online learning or something.
Right.
Okay.
No. So it's just what they call it at the high school. So those are some topics that I'm sure will be conversational. And a bigger picture, one of the things that we are struggling with now even, and certainly we need to think about how we're going to move forward. We have a lot of initiatives in the hopper, mostly created by the state and the federal government under Race to the Top. Even though we're not a member, we're impacted by the requirements that the state has signed up to take care of as a state. One of them being the EdEval. But there are other components such as the DDMs, the district determined measures, which are the common assessments that need to be written. And in general, our curriculum writing, we need to get it done and move along. And that's going to require time, which is money. Hopefully we can figure out ways to do that in a creative way and get it done over the summer, on either end of the fiscal year. Those assessments I just mentioned may be a cost factor that we need to break down and figure out more about. And then looking at the curriculum, we certainly know we wrote the curriculum for mathematics, or at least the scope and sequence piece. We really need to figure out some aligned resources that go along with some of the major change areas, especially at the middle school level. The textbooks that we currently have don't really align well to that. So we're examining different products now to see what will work. So that will be something I'm sure we'll be addressing. Unfortunately, we hope to be at a place where science was going to be on the topic, on the radar. The state has put off approving the next gen standards for science, somewhat in response to the field telling them there's too much on our plate. That's not where I would have put it off, but nonetheless, they chose that's the area. So that's going to be something that will be put a, you know, we won't need to do that as soon as we thought we would. And then transportation, I mentioned the special education contract. That's going to be up at the end of this year, so we'll be doing something new. Right now, I don't know, you know, I don't know how much more it'll be, but I'm sure it'll be at least what we're paying now or more. As far as revenue goes, really it's too early to say whether, you know, what's happening. Certainly, if we want a level services budget, we would need in the vicinity of a 3.5% increase for the assessment side of things. That's an estimate at this point. But that's doing level services. That's not changing anything that I just spoke about in terms of those areas. So we would have to do a lot of finessing to make some of those initiatives possible next year. And then obviously if we did some of those, such as you know, kindergarten, all day kindergarten free, for example, we, you know, we were losing revenue, so we'd have to cover that revenue, and so we'd have to fill that hole pretty quickly with something else to make that work.
So we're not committed to full day kindergarten just yet.
Oh no. And then I mentioned the space for at the high school, reconfiguring things that I think we could do internally for the most part, walls here or there, and then some security steps that I think we still, in examining some of our practices, we'd like to firm up a little bit more, taking a look at how we're using cameras and the like, and door locks, like the create more sectional locking of the high school based on the schedule of it being used after school and so forth, so people won't have access to it. So those are the big topics. I'm just saying them to you so that you start thinking about them. None of them may appear. All of them may appear in the budget in terms of proposals, but those are things that we're certainly having conversations, and don't want anybody to be caught off guard that you hear some of those topics.
Any questions for now? Okay, great. That's helpful. Old business. At our last meeting, Carrie Graham was here talking about the new language for the handbook about the good citizenship. Basically, my recollection of the gist of the changes were to make sure that we were incorporating kids that are participating in all kinds of activities, not just athletics. Mm-hmm. Anyone remember any other significant changes?
Well, the only issue I have with it is this only has anything. This only affects people that have either an association with a club or sports. Mm-hmm. Other than that, there is no ramification for anybody.
Well, no, yeah, but it this is about things that aren't happening on campus at school, right?
Correct.
Okay, just to clarify that.
Right.
So, but so that's why
you,
there was.
I mean, if you're caught with a cigarette off campus, you can be suspended from practice. Or if you're a club, you're suspended from the club. But if you're not associated with any of it,
well, there's no rules to take away.
There's
not right.
There's
no
right.
Consequence. Your parents can yell at you, but there's nothing.
It just seems really kind of, I mean, for the most part, anybody that's in a club or in, you know, doing sports, I mean, they're involved, they're participating, it's like you're punishing the good people.
I'm probably a bad bitch, because I was part of the discussions with that, and I think the thought was that it is a way to curb leadership and the way the kids are viewed as leaders. And a lot of times when kids are in the sports or they're in clubs, they're kind of viewed as leaders, so that if a leader is doing that type of thing and that's
right.
not the kind of behavior you want the other kids to emulate,
mm-hmm.
and that's what the goal of it was.
Right.
So if I think your question is, how come nobody else outside of the sports and clubs aren't being reprimanded?
So you're holding them to a higher standard in the hopes that everyone's going
to... I think you hold the leaders to a higher standard.
And I think the whole premise of this is that it's a privilege to be a part
right.
of these activities.
Right.
And
it's not a right. So if you, I get what you're saying, that,
is
you know,
it,
kids should be held accountable, but.
Yeah, it just doesn't seem equitable.
Well, I would tell you that, well, it may not be smoking, some other offense, even if you're not part of the group, if it brought some sort of nexus to the school, there would be some consequences, or there could be some consequences, I should say. But clearly, the issue here is really about good citizenship, role modeling, and frankly, for the kids who aren't members, if they see that going on and they see there's no consequence for the leaders of the school, then, you know, it just sends a bad example.
It's not fair.
No.
It's not fair, but, I mean,
if
the
you're
alternative
not involved
is
in anything at school other than attending during school,
mm-hmm.
there's nothing to take away. I mean, this isn't coming to school drunk or something. This is going to a party on the weekend.
Mm-hmm.
And
but the other side that bothers me is that, you know, we were sitting here last fall, and we had that incident with the bracelets.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, and that was off. You know, the whole answer was that was not in school. That was somewhere else. It had nothing to do with school. So, you know, everyone deserves an education. That's fine. And this just seems so much stricter. And we're talking about potentially a cigarette because it says any tobacco product.
Mm-hmm.
It just seems off balance. I mean, is it a tried and true? I mean, it's if you're trying to, it just seems a little unfair and a little off balance. I mean, I understand what you're trying to do.
So, is your recommendation not to do that at all? Is it all or none, or?
I think I'd take tobacco out. If it, for some reason, a cigarette just—I know that we don't want them to smoke, and I agree with that, and I know
it's illegal, isn't it?
It's
illegal to buy it.
Who's been arrested for smoking one?
I think it's illegal to buy it or smoke it, isn't it? If you're under 16,
well,
I'll
check.
That'd be good.
Well, if it were illegal to smoke it, why would it be illegal to buy it?
Right.
I mean, me, a resource officer.
It's consistent with. I think the alignment was the extracurricular, so that they weren't being held to a different standard. So there may be yet another evolution at some other point for all kids.
Right.
You know, but right now we want to make sure that we weren't holding sports in a different standard than we were holding our own activities within our own high school.
The standard has already been in place for sports.
Right.
Yes,
that's and
right.
That's driven by MIAA.
Right.
So the school, I mean, the school can be harsher,
right?
But
they have to follow. So.
But the MIAA is already.
This is
pretty strict. I think.
It pretty mirrors it. Yeah.
I applaud it and I support it. My only concern is that.
No. So it's illegal to sell or give tobacco products to someone who is under 18, and you can be. Prosecuted, but the law does not specify minors possessing or smoking cigarettes in Massachusetts.
Interesting.
There you go.
Oh, thank you.
No, I only
so don't buy for minors.
Yes. I guess my only concern is
steal it.
That it. I think I think there are a lot of kinks that are going to need to be worked out in terms of what becomes sort of an equitable application because, you know, sports, it's pretty well defined that, you know, most teams, you know, soccer, baseball, yada, yada, they're going to have 18 games in regular season. So you take away 25% of that the first time.
Mm-hmm.
And it carries over into your next sports season if you're too close to the end. And that pretty much also defines your amount of practice time. But clubs and I would say other than like the math team, robotics, and the plays when they're doing them, the other things meet so, you know, typical clubs meet fairly infrequently,
right,
that I think it's going to be hard to have it be a good, you know, to have enough ramification that it actually makes an impact without effectively banning you forever or dragging it out so long that you lose your connection with, you know, because if a club or something meets like even once every 2 weeks,
right,
you know, if you're taking away 25% of what the rest of the school year or sort of what would be 25% of a sports season, which might only be like one meeting, which you might miss anyways. So I think it's going to be hard. I'm not saying don't do it. I just think that they need to be prepared for a lot of bumps in the road before this gets ironed out.
Yeah, I agree.
I thought that some of that discretion or those decisions were made by the leaders of those, either coaches or organizations or directors.
Right, but
I think there's going to be some conversations.
That in terms of, you know, if you've got a club that meets, I don't think there are too many clubs that meet every week even. So, you know, I think that you would just end up.
But I'm saying then that the advisor or whoever the adult decision maker is would decide what the punishment or what was going to be taken away, as opposed to saying, well, it has to be 25%.
But they're going to refer back to this. Only because since it's written, they're going to refer back to this and say, okay, this is the standard.
That was why it was done. Because there's nothing in writing. So you have no precedent. You have nothing, no standard.
I say.
And the other thought was it's not fair that kids who are in sports teams are docked, but kids who have other passions are not.
Right.
And, you know, this is not, doesn't mean that, you know, after a few months of implementation, they don't look at this in the spring, which they will again for their handbook. And if they need to revise it, they revise it.
I worry about the consistency with, I don't know how quickly, like, advisors for clubs turn over or whatever, but if it's left to the discretion of a club that 1 year this person's head of the drama club and then the next year and, you know, and then it's not consistent what goes through it, it's up to the discretion of the advisor to be consistent with you know, something happens when somebody's a junior.
Sure.
Right.
Yeah.
But I mean, because the sports have to follow the MIAA rules, it's pretty black and white. The coach could add more to that if they want, but
the minimum is well defined,
exactly. So I think to leave that in the hands of, and I think, like, for some of them, a lot of it is parent involved. Like, the drama club is run by, I mean, I know this the parents do everything.
Yeah.
So your kids leave the play, you're going to say, all right, listen, you know, for a week. No, I'm not, you know what I'm just saying. There needs to be, I think, a standard for that, too.
Yeah, but I don't know. I think the whole premise of this was to deter drug and alcohol abuse.
Right.
Right? So, and I think the struggle with for the group was, how do we do that in a way that's meaningful but not, you know, excessive and not a joke? So I think this was a way of, you know, you said it best, put a line in the sand and see if it works, and if it does, fine, and if it doesn't, tweak it as we go along, but there has to be repercussions. And a lot of the discussion was around kids who were in sports teams who weren't reprimanded. So it was really a reaffirmation of those rules as well. But I think that your point is well taken, and it falls in line with the intent. You know, see where we go with it.
So there was a feeling that kids on sports teams were not being reprimanded?
I think there was a thought. No, I would never want that to be perceived as a blanket statement. But I think the definitions were not as structured as we thought they were. And I think a lot of times individual coaches may handle things, you know, the interpretation may be different. It's just a way to standardize.
It's not on the field.
coach is like, not every coach works for the district, right?
I would say a lot of them, I don't know. I know one of the outside sports teams are different than mine. Are all the high school coaches?
I'd say we're about 75%. About 75% work for the school district somewhere.
So would they, since they're not administration, would they be following this?
Mm-hmm. They have to, because they're
not
part of the school.
As a coach, district. Well, at that point, are they administration?
Yes.
As a coach?
No.
So what's holding them to the, what's holding the coach to the standard?
The administration.
But then they'll lose their job.
Right.
And they have to follow the NIA rules. Because that could affect the team. Right.
Yes.
Well, I think, in my opinion anyway, we recognize there are perhaps some deficiencies with the plan, but I think it's better than not having one, or than having what we had before. I'd like to make a motion that we approve the document as presented to us at our last meeting, with the understanding that this message will get back, that, you know, reevaluate after using it for a while, and hopefully, you know, revisit it periodically.
I second that.
All those in favor?
Absolutely.
Looks like 1, 2, 3, 4. We have 4 in favor.
4.
All those opposed?
Do I abstain?
Yes, you
can.
Right? You can abstain.
I like the intent. I just think it's.
But now here's Jeff.
I think it needs work.
It still passes.
There's 4 people.
Yeah, it does. Yeah, it's majority.
Yeah. What are we voting on?
We're just voting on the
Let's come join us, Jeff.
That's it.
I'm in favor
of the
Jeff.
You're in favor? Okay. Great. Thank you.
I'm getting up would make the vote happen.
Yeah. Okay. We have a whole slew of policies here, 7 of them. We talked about them last time. The changes that the policy subcommittee made were all in blue type, if you were to have viewed them, hopefully, on the website. Do you think it's... can we approve all 7 of them together?
Absolutely.
Okay. Before we ask for a motion, does anybody have any questions or find any problems with them? Yay, looking for a motion.
I move that we vote to accept the policies as listed in our agenda and in our packet.
Second.
All those in favor? Unanimous. Excellent.
Good work, policy.
Thank you. Citizens' comments. Yes, Anne.
This could be nothing, but I just have to say something.
Okay.
As far as studies are concerned at the high school, it's an all or nothing thing. My daughter doesn't have any. You know, she's
right.
Dancing at jig when a teacher doesn't show up and she gets
a study.
Right.
Right.
She doesn't have any.
My son doesn't
either.
And that's a senior.
Yeah,
that's.
She's
a senior.
Then no one had 2, and I said, go sign yourself up for another class.
You
came home with this.
Music theory is covering technology.
Yeah, 2 stars covering,
you
know.
Are
you singing at the high school?
Yeah. Keyboarding.
It's called keyboarding.
These kids, they know it, you know, by the time.
Yeah, not like we learned it in high school.
I am the fastest taper.
But anyway, that's just something to think about.
Okay, thank you.
I just have, I don't know where this
okay,
is a follow-up
okay.
to last week. I was wondering how it went at the half day when I was hoping you said that you were going to address the teachers and their concerns of feeling untrusted and that they couldn't do their job and overwhelmed and...
Yeah,
I was hoping
it
was addressed.
It was. You know, we had a great, I thought a great session. It was well received. Get feedback through surveys on that. It was on a tough topic too. It was like another piece of the puzzle of the year. DDMs, just district determined measures. But I thought overall the environment was very positive. Our teachers really have done a great job in just really understanding what the work is and going forward. I don't know if it's specific to individuals that, you know, that person knows or something, but it was an upbeat mood, and but I did address it.
And it wasn't directly.
I did, yes. Okay.
And it was you as a group, or was it in each individual?
No, me as with all 500.
So you didn't have anybody come up to you and
hey, no tomatoes?
Speak any no concerns? Do teachers have a problem approaching you at all?
I don't think so. I think I'm very approachable.
Yeah.
Well, I know. That's true. I don't think that they have a problem.
Have you ever, like, just curious, have you ever personally, like, gone up to every single teacher, like, individually?
I know 95% of our staff by first name.
Okay, I'm just asking.
Yeah, no.
For somebody to go in and talk to Julie, and then it's all up to you.
Right.
That's not easy.
Right. Yeah. Listen. We all know, and it's from everywhere. It's from our commissioner, you know, at my level, the superintendent level, principal level. You know, we're all feeling the overwhelm because there are a lot of things going on the plate. I had a meeting today with an agent of the commissioner, you know, and they're trying to address it too, you know, because they're hearing it. You know, some of my colleagues are being very specific about their feedback. You know, so it's not out of the ordinary. I didn't dismiss it in any way. Of course, you know, we are feeling it. It's very real. So, you know, we're trying to figure out ways to do it, to address it, you know, mm-hmm. in terms of giving them time, figuring out what we can do in the background so that they can start meetings without having to do a lot of grunt work, you know. Okay. We bought some technology that we hope will be a faster piece for student data, you know, so we're trying to address some pieces. We took a little piece off some of our high school staff plate in terms of some reporting. You know, we're trying in different ways to have them focus on teaching as their first and foremost, but these other pieces help teaching, and get it done.
So on top of that, is there like a pecking order of like if you're a teacher and you have something that you're concerned about, is there a process in which they go to the principal or something?
Right, they go to the principal and talk to the principal.
And then just elevate.
Principal relates it to me, or. I mean, I'm in the buildings every week. I mean,
okay.
Are we supposed to be in touch with teachers at all?
That wouldn't be the pecking order.
Okay.
No. I mean, I think, you know, what you're doing now is, you know, when you get field calls, direct them back to the principal so that they can hear.
All right. We have an executive session coming up. Hopefully everybody can stay a little bit longer. We will need a motion to go into executive session.
Go for it.
I move that we adjourn our regular session to go into executive session for the purpose of discussing collective bargaining strategy, and that our executive session includes Superintendent Wood, Assistant Superintendent King, Administrative Assistant Alita Masterson, Monica Fisco, and at the end of our executive session, we will adjourn back to regular meeting for the sole purpose of adjourning our meeting and will not be conducting any further business at that time.
I was impressed.
Second, I could have never done that.
Maureen's the best. And we have to roll call. Lynn?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
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 Great.